It's Ovid's Linoleum Knife Hour, brought to you by Ovid.tv.
Thank you, Alonzo.
You know, Ovid brings you the finest in streaming niche cinema entertainment.
You bet.
For example, if you were a subscriber to Ovid right now, you could be watching the 1998 documentary from Spencer Nosako called Kelly Loves Tony. Do you remember that one?
I that went below my radar, but so much of what's on Ovid does, and that's the point of Ovid.
It's like a PBS. I think it aired on PBS back in the day.
Okay.
Two 18-year-old kids. They were Laotian refugees, and grew up in Oakland. I think one of them was born in a refugee camp, and the other one, their parents, you know, came over. Kelly and Tony, and they had video cameras, and they made, along with, you know, Spencer Nosako, they made this documentary about being 18 and graduating from high school, and she was pregnant at the time, and he was trying to get out of a gang that he was in.
Wow.
And it's this kind of you are there real world, but, you know, the kind of real world that the real world on MTV didn't pay any attention to.
Right. More like Jean Rouch's idea of what the real world is.
Thank you. Speaking of Ovid on TV.
If you thought that was a good joke, Ovid.tv is the service for you.
And if you didn't think it was a good joke, but you got the joke,
Ovid.tv will learn you some things.
So, I actually went and did a little homework on, you know, where are they now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out they're both about 40. They're no longer a couple. They have two kids. And Tony could not be reached for an interview.
I see.
But Kelly could.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, everything's fine for Kelly. We hope everything's fine for Tony.
For sure.
Yeah.
That premiered on Friday the 17th.
It
and
did.
Coming up this Wednesday, September 22nd.
A much more harrowing documentary called A Maid for Each by Mar Abi Samra. It's from 2016. And it is about the domestic work industry in Lebanon. And what I am leaving out is the fact that when you are a Lebanese employer of a domestic worker, you own them.
Yeah.
Yeah. The women are arranged and trafficked from Asian and African countries to work in Lebanese households. It's like a mail order thing, but you own the mail. It's chilling and unhappy. But the vital urgency of documentaries like this is that they expose this sort of thing in the hopes that somebody in power can do something about it.
Absolutely. So both of these films are making their streaming debut. They are both exclusively available on Ovid.tv, and because you are a Linoleum Knife listener, if you enter the code CINEMA when you go to Ovid.tv to subscribe, you get a free month of the service. So again, that's Ovid.tv. Use the code CINEMA for a free month, and you'll be glad you did. A podcast of the cinema.
Or, you know, as we just said, it's Ovid's Linoleum Knife Hour.
Oh, indeed, yes.
Brought to you by
Ovid.tv. I'm Alonzo Duraldi, you're Dave White. We are film critics. We write at The Wrap. I host some other podcasts as well. We are spouses.
I'm type 2 diabetic.
And that's new. We don't say it every week.
It's a brand new thing. I just, you know, it's like we are now sponsored by a variety of low-carb foods as well.
It's the low glycemic index hour.
Well, you know, I figured I announced it on Linoleum Nights. I announced it on Linoleum Knife and Fork, which is where it is most relevant.
Sure, two of our Patreon
but
shows.
You know what? Let's everyone can join this party.
Why not?
It's the party where I drastically change several things about my life.
And you've been doing it.
And yeah, I have been. So, you know, that announcement should not worry anyone.
Yes.
Because I'm new to it and because it's not extreme yet. But, you know, I'm just going to put it in my Twitter bio. How about that?
Ask me about my... Why can I never remember that thing? The 1C...
Ask me about my A1C.
A1C. Yeah. Thank you.
Also, I'm accepting all seaweed-based snacks. I'll tell you, the upside, honestly, the upside of this is that all the things that I'm supposed to be, like, truly shoveling in my mouth are things I already love.
Well,
like, I know you don't like the seaweed snacks,
but
I can't get enough of them. Like, and I couldn't get enough of them before this, you know, thrilling new diagnosis.
I'm glad that's working out for you.
Yeah. I mean, okay, if I'm being real and honest, though, obviously the greatest snack of all time is the Harriet the Spy special, which is you come home after school, you sing the song to yourself about the snack, and then your nanny slash minder,
Old Golly,
presents you with a slice of cake and a glass of milk. And when you walk in the house, you're singing the cake and milk song to yourself. It's time for my cake, it's time for my cake, it's time for my cake and milk. I haven't had any cake in about 3 weeks.
Yeah. Because you haven't made one.
I haven't made one. Right, that's the deal, right?
Like, generally, if you don't make them, they're
not out
happening.
Here buying them anywhere. I make them, I bake them.
When it cools down, I will be making a pound cake at some point.
Well, you know, I'll be making one too. Like I said on the LKF, I'm not banning anything. I'm just
having smaller portions.
Drastically decreasing. Instead of having the Harriet the Spy snack every day,
it'll be for a treat.
Maybe it'll be an occasional treat. I don't know. The future is unwritten.
That it is.
Yeah. Someone recommended that documentary to me, Forks Over Knives.
Oh, I heard that was terrible.
The other day. Yeah, I heard it was terrible too, but maybe I'll watch it. Mm. I mean, I saw the Sugar documentary a few years back called Fed Up. Remember that one?
Yeah, yeah.
Like Katie Couric is all gung-ho about it. Mm-hmm. That was not a bad documentary. It'll frighten the pants off you. And maybe Forks Over Knives will too. I don't know. I don't remember much about Fed Up other than the amount of sugar that you're supposed to have in your diet every day, which is like, if you're a man, it's like 36 grams or something like that. And I forget what it said for women, but...
I, by the end of breakfast, I've already left that one in the dust. So.
No, you have not. I can barely get you to eat breakfast some days. You drink your coffee and then you're like, oh, I forgot to eat breakfast. Which stuns me, blows my mind. Because I can't figure it out.
I'm all hyped up on caffeine speed.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't have my tea now until after my morning bowl of oatmeal.
Hmm. All right, this is fascinating, but this is a podcast of the cinema.
Says who? We decide what happens on this show.
Okay, yes. Well, I'm half of we, and I think we should maybe move on.
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe we start talking about a different topic, perhaps tangentially related to cinema. Listen, my beautiful new disease is related to two documentary films that I just mentioned. So, yes, all of life is cinema in this home.
Okay, fine.
Have you know? Oh, but I guess you'd rather talk about Cry Macho.
Yeah, I'm dying to go deep on
Cry Macho. Macho's a chicken, by the way.
Yes. Technically a cock.
Yes.
Fighting cock.
And trust, there's a joke about that.
Yes.
In the film about an old man, a young boy, a chicken, and a variety of cars that they just sort of take along the way for their picaresque journey to some kind of enlightenment.
Picaresque is the most generous adjective.
No, I'm feeling generous today. I'm feeling generous. The generosity that the world has chosen not to bestow upon me in the form of daily cake and milk.
Well, yes.
I will now bestow upon Cry Macho. Not as good a film about a kid with a chicken as Moana.
No.
But a film all the same. From Clint Eastwood. Legendary Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
90-something.
91.
91 years young. Clint Eastwood. Legendary actor, director, singer, if you saw Paint Your Wagon.
Oh, he sings a lot.
I know he does. He sang a song at the end of Gran Torino.
Oh, yes, he did.
Okay, so here's what this movie's about. I will tell you. Clint is a retired rodeo cowboy. It is the year 1979, 1980.
Yeah.
And not only is he a retired rodeo cowboy, he still works on a ranch that is, you know, connected to the rodeo. The ranch is run by Dwight Yoakam. And Dwight Yoakam says to Clint, "Hey, I have an assignment for you. I need you to take yourself down to Mexico and kidnap my child."
Essentially.
"I have a child in Mexico. His mother is terrible, and she does not want him. And in fact, I have a gut feeling," and this is really weird, "I have a gut feeling that this child is being abused by the mom and her various employees and boyfriends and whatnot. She's very rich. So go down to Mexico City, kidnap this child. All you'll have to do is say, 'Hey, your father sent me. Get in the car.' And he'll just go with you. Tell him about how I live on a ranch and there'll be horses and he can have one and it's a rodeo and it's a perfect life up here in the United States. I assume he's being abused. Go kidnap him, tell him everything's cool, that you're a good friend of his father's, get in the car." Now, breaking my description of the narrative for just a moment. Young people, if anyone tells you that they're a good friend of your parents,
and that you should get in their car,
you should get in their car,
or van,
you should scream, "Stranger danger," yes, at the top of your lungs,
yes,
and run in the opposite direction. If you have a rock or a stick in your hand, throw it at that person.
If you are in Mexico, yell, "Estranjero peligro?" I'm not quite sure what "stranger danger" exactly translates to, but something along those lines.
You speak the wrong kind of Spanish.
There is that.
To be assuming anything about how people communicate in Mexico.
Also, "estranjero" is like somebody who's foreign, which isn't necessarily the same as stranger, so I don't want to like make it sound like I'm being xenophobic about Americans, you know.
Oh, you could be xenophobic about Americans.
We had it coming.
The people of the United States. So anyway, that part of the plot feels bizarre. Mm-hmm. No one questions this at all, though, right? He just goes down to Mexico.
Well, it's 1980, you know.
It all works the way he wants it to. The kid gets in the car with the chicken, and they start on their journey. And because Clint Eastwood has discovered slow cinema, this hour and 45-minute film feels like a very long road trip. It is unhurried. It seems to have no destination at all, other than like a monologue near the end where Clint talks about how to be a macho is no kind of life. You ruin your life, you waste it, as he did. He wasted his life. "Kid, I know I'm 91, but I'm telling you as a 13-year-old, don't become like me. Don't have all the fun.
Well, the movie also exists, of course, for a lady to fall in love with Clint, because right. a lady always does in these movies.
Well, I think that, you know, Eastwood is doing two things here. I think he is simultaneously indulging himself as a man who is his age, but who looks in the mirror and still sees Dirty Harry, right?
Like the first Dirty Harry, not like the Deadpool.
Right. And who thinks, yeah, why wouldn't a woman of any age be down for this? I am Clint G.D. Eastwood, right? And there is an element of truth to that.
Well, sure.
Because, look, my 91-year-old boyfriend, Ed Asner, just died.
Yes.
And even at 91, he could get it. So I would say this about Clint.
Okay, go ahead.
Those blue eyes are still...
They are sparkly, steely.
Still twinkly.
Let me be very clear. I'm not saying that people aren't allowed to be sexual at any age or attractive at any age or any of that stuff.
But when you are the filmmaker.
When you are the filmmaker and you are also the star and you make The Mule, where you have two different three ways over the course of the movie for a little reason.
I'm sorry. I actually applaud that.
It's a little shameless.
It is shameless, but you know what? I'm okay with that. I'm truly okay with that part of The Mule. I've had time to think about it. If you can have a three-way when you're 90, by all means.
Katie, bar the door.
Enjoy life while you still have it.
This is a category of Eastwood movie. The sort of mentorship film.
Right.
Torino was one.
Yes.
Honky Tonk Man, Million Dollar Baby. You know, it's the Elder Eastwood passes his wisdom along.
Like what was that baseball one? Kind of like this as well.
For Love of the Game?
No.
No.
Something about the curve.
Oh, The Perfect?
Trouble
with the Curve?
We can't remember the names of these movies.
He's made 10,000 films at this point. Trouble with the Curve, is that it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
didn't see it.
I think so.
So, you know, it's that movie. But yeah, I mean, that you are categorizing this as slow cinema. Again, as with Picaresque, very generous of you. Yeah, this movie just wanders around aimlessly, getting nowhere slowly.
I get the point, right?
Sure.
I get the whole, like, elegiac vibe that he's going for. A young person recently told me that I should use the word vibe more often, so I am.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. You'll hear it here once. I understand where he's going, and I understand that you do want to, you know, as a filmmaker, sort of sum it up while you've got the wherewithal to do it.
Do you think he's making this as an adios?
Well, you know, I thought the last five movies he made were adioses, so who knows?
True.
He may still have... Listen...
Manuel de Oliveira.
Thank you. That's exactly what you said while we were watching this on the couch the other day. And I said, you know, that means there's like 16 more years of films from Clint Eastwood. Because Manuel de Oliveira lived to be like 106, 107.
He did.
Kept making movies.
Yeah.
So, you know, who this is... for all we know, Clint is going to live to be 106, and he's just going to keep on making movies. And they're all going to have this same feel. You know, well, the sun is setting.
Here's what I've learned.
I'm going to take my last chance to dance with this pretty lady in the cantina. And so...
I'd rather this be his last movie than Richard Jewell or The 1517 to Paris.
Okay.
It's at least a little personal, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Look, there are critics out there who are down for Eastwood in any and all manifestations.
Even Jersey Boys.
Even Jersey Boys. And I've just never been one of those. Like, I admire his accomplishments. I think there are certain films of his, I think, that are unquestionably great.
Yeah, it's true.
But, you know, as with so many prolific filmmakers, they're not all gems.
Yeah, they can't all be great. I don't think this is one of them.
Yeah.
I think this is a slight minor film from him.
Certainly.
And I, at the same time, think that the filmmaking, aside from the fact that the performances in the movie could have used a second take, and I mean that for everyone in the cast, including Clint. He's famously not about doing too many takes.
He likes to move it along.
He likes to move it along. And, you know, he could have gone for another second or third one with every line of dialogue uttered here. Visually, it's nice. It's not obtrusive. It's not showy. It's not necessarily a thing of beauty. Nor is it ugly.
Yeah.
It lands right in that middle, which makes it hard to talk about.
It's a dusty road trip. It's not, this isn't like Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, but it's also not like we're in Monument Valley. You know, right. You're right. It does kind of fall in the middle. You know, Eduardo Manette, who plays the kid, feels a little awkward.
He's a TV kid in Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, like I said, you know, everyone
would have benefited.
Dwight Yoakam, Clint Eastwood, everyone in the movie, the woman who plays the mom, like, the line readings are, was there a rehearsal? Like, I don't know.
It's also, I mean, I will say the two female characters in this movie so fall into the, like, Madonna whore paradigm.
They certainly do.
You know, like, people are always giving Scorsese a hard time about his female characters, but, like, I mean, does Eastwood have an Alice Doesn't Live Here anymore to his credit? Like, has he made at least one movie that's sort of female-centered?
And I did not hate Changeling. And I liked Angelina Jolie in it.
I did not care for that film, but yes, you're right. It is at least female-centric, and it is about, it does take this woman's plight seriously.
Correct. So there's one, and we're probably missing some others because we're not in the mood to champion this filmmaker right now.
Yeah.
We were both simultaneously bored and half interested and annoyed, exasperated.
Yeah, this didn't even make me angry the way that Richard
appreciative moments
did. It's just sort of there.
I would like one last great one from him.
That would be
nice.
You
know, another Unforgiven, which I think is a great one.
Yeah.
You know, he's still up and around. He's still doing things, so he could do it.
Yeah.
But this is not the one for me on that front.
Speaking of Hollywood nonagenarians, we lost Jane Powell this week.
Yes.
At the age of 93, and she is best known for Seven Brides, Seven Brothers, Royal Wedding,
Royal
A
Wedding.
Date with Judy. She is also the star of our favorite
weird
crackpot, can't believe this exists, MGM musical.
We watched it during 2020. It's called Athena, and it's about
health food.
Yeah.
And feng shui. And
health food, feng shui, bodybuilding, and the seven muses who all live in the Hollywood Hills.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a crackpot movie, but it co-stars Debbie Reynolds.
Yes.
And it is...
you have to see it.
You must see it. It is addictively weird.
Yeah.
We've seen it twice at this point, and when we talk to friends about it, we say, hey, have I got one for you?
This one may have gone under your radar. I'd never heard of it, you know, and it's from like the 50s, you know, like prime MGM territory. I think came out maybe the same year as Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Maybe.
But it's the one no one talks about.
Yeah,
it pops up on TCM every
in the
so
remembrances
often
of Jane Powell. No one's going, yeah, Athena. But we are.
Oh, man. Not to be missed.
Alonso?
Yes, sir.
What's Amber Petty doing right now?
I'm so glad you asked, because it's always something with Amber Petty.
It's always something
always with Amber Petty. Amber's got a free workshop It's called
Again.
It's called Right Now. WRITE.
That's right.
Right Now, that's your correct. Blueprint to a byline. It's a 60-minute Zoom that will help you go from maybe I'll write someday to I just got paid to write about podcasts.
Even wait, you can get paid to write about podcasts?
Well, Amber says you can, so I believe her. Even if you have no previous experience, learn how to start freelance writing and get actual writing done in class. Plus, Amber will share her story about how she got a byline in the New York Times, which involves both Snooki and Columbo, so you know it'll be fun. The last workshops are this Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Assuming you are listening today on the 20th, we're talking this week. Tuesday the 21st, Wednesday the 22nd, Thursday the 23rd. Head to amberpetty.com/linoleum to find the time that works for you. Sign up for free at amberpetty.com/linoleum. No code required.
McPhil Collins.
Just like him.
We saw The Eyes of Tammy Faye.
Yes, we did. The new biopic with the same title as the 2000 documentary.
Yes. It stars Jessica Chastain as Tammy Faye Baker. Do people in other countries know who these people were? Was the PTL, the scandal, they had a satellite and all that stuff? They were on in other countries, weren't they?
I guess, yeah. That was the whole, I mean, that was the idea of the satellite.
Yeah.
And certainly the scandal made headlines when it all went down in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if this is one of those movies where it's going to open in other countries and people are going to be like, oh, this is a thing? This really happened?
Here's the story. Tammy Faye Baker and Jim Baker were an evangelist couple. They came from the tradition of the
Charismatics.
Church of God, Assembly of God. They were Charismatics. What that means is that in that American Protestant tradition, you get the Holy Spirit, you speak in tongues, and you sometimes have special spiritual gifts. You can heal people, and none of this is true, of course, but that's what they do. They met at Bible college, and they got married very quickly, and they hit the road and became, traveling around.
He would preach. She would do puppet shows.
Preachers, yeah.
The puppet shows eventually got them on to
the 700 Club, the Christian Broadcasting Network.
Yes.
Pat Robertson's enterprise. And they got the attention of the other televangelists in the world, Jimmy Swaggart, Jerry Falwell, particularly Jerry Falwell.
Yes.
Who was a Machiavellian character who pulled lots of strings.
Not for nothing is he played by Vincent D'Onofrio.
Both business and political, and was a very evil man.
Yes.
So they rose in prominence, Jim and Tammy did.
They broke away from Pat Robertson, started their own network called PTL.
PTL.
Praise the Lord.
And they were wildly popular for a couple reasons. They emphasized the fact that God loved you, which was a different message than people like Falwell and Jimmy Swaggart were doling out. They were more hellfire, and they stayed that way until they died.
God is disappointed in you.
Pretty much. Tammy Faye, in particular, was an extremely emotional person. She was also quite, what's the word?
Ebullient?
That, yeah. But I don't want to minimize her, but there was a childlike quality to her.
Yes.
And
she was a singer, and she struck you as the kind of person who felt things really hard.
She felt things very deeply, and she was given to crying a lot on the air. And this endeared her to people. Even as their, and I'm using air quotes to use this word, their ministry became more and more corrupt and, what's the word?
Yeah.
Thieving.
Yeah, the Bakers lived a very, very lavish lifestyle.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tammy Faye was sort of was famous for her sense of personal style, shall we say.
She loved tacky, expensive, and wild outfits. She wore
tons of makeup.
Tons of makeup, past the point of reason for, you know, many people. And she was just this big character. Jim, on the other hand, was
a smoothie.
A smooth, shrewd business person who was always out to make that money. And he did. And then they got caught with, I guess, some sort of fraud of some sort.
Well, there
I
had
always
been,
forget what the scandal
there
was.
Had been, there were
in the
financial scandals
sense.
That dogged them, they managed to outrun. But then when the whole Jessica Hahn thing went down, where a woman that he'd had an affair with and had paid off to keep quiet and then went to the press anyway, that really kind of rocked their world. And it allowed Jerry Falwell to swoop in and basically take everything from them.
Yeah. But the sexual scandal, you know, opened up the can on the financial scandals.
Yes.
Falwell stepped in, took over, left them essentially broke, and Jim in prison. And then weirder things started happening. Jim Baker got out of prison after a few years and started the whole grift over.
Yes.
They were divorced by this point, Jim and Tammy. And she had gone off and married Roe Messner.
Okay, now you're getting stuff that's not in this movie.
Hang on, I'm just telling their story.
Okay.
We'll talk about the movie in a second, but I want to explain these people.
Sure.
Because as a person who grew up evangelical, they were always on the fringes of my, you know, world.
Yeah.
No one I knew, even, and I need to be very clear about this, I was in some extremely conservative, fundamentalist Baptist circles. And even those folks thought Jim and Tammy were clowns and crooks.
And they were also preaching the prosperity gospel.
They were.
Which this idea of like, give us money and God will pay you back tenfold.
It's what Joel Osteen is about right,
right.
now.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's a grift that continues.
Yeah. So Jim Baker started it all back up again. He is still on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's quite old now. And he's like selling survivalist food buckets and
yes.
stuff like that. Tammy Faye died in what, 2007?
Yes,
I think.
After a battle with cancer.
But before that, she had a public sort of re-estimation of herself happened. And it all stemmed from the way in the 1980s, she would do things Jim apparently didn't always know was going on. She would arrange segments for their show where she would interview people about people having very serious problems. Particularly in one instance, a gay man with AIDS who appeared on the show, and Tammy was very kind and compassionate toward him.
Right.
Which stunned their world. Because
it barely happened. It was barely happening at that point in the secular media, much less on a televangelism
correct.
Program.
So she had this connection with people who she believed were suffering, and she wanted to help. By the time the 90s rolled around, she was sort of, you know, looking for work somewhere, anywhere. And somebody saw her on either the Lisa Gibbons show or Entertainment Tonight with Lisa Gibbons. I can't remember now which situation this was. But a producer saw Tammy Faye and was like, let's get her back on TV. And let's pair her with an openly gay guy host and see what happens on daytime talk show television. So they got Jim J. Bullock,
who had been on the sitcom
Too Close for Comfort in the 80s, and who had, since the 80s, had come out And in his own words, it was a pretty short list
yeah.
of people that they were auditioning for this. And so what happened in the 90s on ABC, morning television...
Was it ABC or was it syndicated?
Well, it was on ABC in Dallas. It was on the ABC affiliate in Dallas. I suppose perhaps it was syndicated. But it was on the ABC station in Dallas. And it was called the Jim Jay and Tammy Faye Show. And it lasted a few months before she got sick and had to quit. But during the months that it was on, you have never seen anything like this.
It was something else.
If you want to go to...
there are tragically few clips on YouTube.
There are very few clips of it on YouTube, but the wildest one of all is there. And it's when the Captain and Tennille came on, and they sang Muskrat Love, their inexplicably big hit from the 70s, a literal love song about muskrats, which included synthesizer... muskrat noises in the middle of it.
Chirrups.
Which must have made Tammy Faye very happy in its original
iteration.
Pop cultural making the rounds, because she joined the Captain and Tennille in this performance by making extremely loud muskrat noises. You can see the look of shock and dismay on both the faces, on the faces of both the Captain and Tennille. And Jim J. Bullock is like, yeah, this is what's going to happen on this show. Any old time, any day of the week. Welcome to it, you guys.
So here's the thing. You get all of this from the documentary and from that YouTube clip.
Yeah.
And
you don't get all of it from this film.
No. And what you do get from this film
is
not all that interesting, because it's very by-the-numbers biopic.
Yeah. They want to include... Michael Showalter is the director of this film, and what they're trying to do here is include the highlights of their careers, their lives, their early lives, the scandal, and then a little bit of what happens after. But they don't give you the Jim Jay and Tammy Faye Show. No. They don't give you...
They create Roe Messner as a character and then never mention the fact that he and Tammy Faye later get married.
Right.
And then he had his own financial scandal.
They zhuzh around with the timeline so that things that didn't happen or things that did happen are completely either made up to have happened or ignored. And it's just strange because...
And if it made the movie more exciting or funny or sharp or something...
That would be understandable.
But it doesn't.
It does not. This film revolves entirely around Jessica Chastain's performance as Tammy Faye. And it is the kind of performance you see around this time of year, Academy Award and other nominating boards. Love... Transformation.
Yes.
Performances. Where the actor becomes unrecognizable as the person that they're playing.
The most sort of iconic example of this in recent memory would be Charlize Theron in Monster.
Yeah.
Playing Aileen Wuornos, where, you know, she put on weight, she's got facial prosthetics.
Yeah.
You know, her hair is dirty and,
right.
You know, like all this stuff which is... Sadly, there's become this sort of shorthand of people like, take me seriously as an actor.
Right.
I'm willing to go through basically the Lon Chaney car wash.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, when Charlize Theron did it, she also gives this really dynamic performance. And so all the other stuff kind of supports that. And so overall, yes, I think, you know, she deserved all the plaudits, all the everything that she got out of that role. But I think a lot of other performers since then... kind of just go with, I'm going to play something really extreme and I'm going to do it in a way that makes me completely unrecognizable. And I never had that moment, and I talked about this in the past, you know, when you're watching one famous person playing another famous person.
Yeah.
There has to be that moment where the famous person you know disappears into the other one that they're playing. I never stopped seeing Jessica Chastain in this movie. I never, it could be like, and I feel like if you listen to what Tammy Faye Baker actually talked like, if somebody had done that for an entire film, audiences would be like, what are you doing? This is crazy.
She had a squeaky, giggly, squeaky, giggly, sing-songy voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she had it, and like you hear it.
That and that was kind of what people dug about her.
Yeah. You know, I'm reminded of like when Nick Nolte did that accent in Lorenzo's Oil and people raised their eyebrows at it. And then you see an interview with the guy he's playing and he's doing it.
Yeah.
Like Nick Nolte is completely nailing the way that guy talks. Yeah. But when you hear it in a movie, you think, what is this? So I guess she was afraid of going into what Tammy Faye sounded like. Yeah.
You see, the problem is you can't go too big and parody this person because she was already a caricature.
Yeah, a self-created.
And she had made herself that way.
Yeah.
You know, she intentionally did that. She, in at least one interview, and I can't remember now if this is in the film or not, when they're trying to give her a makeover at the very beginning, and it's set in the 1994.
Yeah, the very beginning of the movie, she's like, well, you can't do my lashes, and my lip line is permanent.
Permanent lip line, and yeah. The mascara, no, I'm sorry, the eyeliner is permanent, the lip liner is permanent. She'd had all these things done permanently to herself. But there's a quote from her in real life where she said, a clown does not appear without their makeup.
Oh, wow. That's not in the movie.
Yeah. And that is very much, you know, in keeping with the persona that she began with when she was young, with the puppets and the, you know, the frolicking everywhere. She saw herself as a person that you could laugh with, laugh at, cry with, and she liked it that way.
Yeah.
It
put her in charge of things.
She seemed also to be sort of oblivious to the crime going on around her. The idea that, because she fully believed that in the prosperity gospel.
Yeah.
She believed that it was good for Christians to be rich. And if they lived a very rich, lavish lifestyle, then that meant that they could give more to people. Right? That was in her head.
Yeah. And it would bring more people to the Lord.
It would bring more people to them. Yeah. And so she was, by my estimation, a true believer in all of the things that she experienced and was selling through the years. Jim Baker was not.
No. He's a charlatan.
He's a charlatan. And unfortunately, we are not meant to empathize with him at all. There is one person in the film that you were meant to like, and that's Tammy Faye.
Yeah.
The and as you said, the film stops short in so many ways because it doesn't want to risk you not loving her. It doesn't want to risk you thinking that she's too much or that she in any way was guilty of anything.
There was somebody that I know on Facebook was saying, oh, this movie should have been directed by John Waters.
Well, yeah.
And my thought was, no, this movie should have been written by Larry Karaszewski and Scott Alexander. Because they took Larry Flint, they took Ed Wood, and, you know, Andy Kaufman, like all these sort of outliers of show business, which Tammy Faye is. She is pure showbiz all the way through. And they found a way to make us empathize with those people and to illustrate what those people meant in the grander scheme of American culture and how they were almost sort of inevitable products of pop culture in one way or another. And I think they could have found a way into this story in a way that would have been more meaningful and that you would have cared more about Tammy Faye and you would have understood how the Bakers and Tammy Faye particularly are a manifestation of a specifically American kind of religion. Spirituality and religion. Yeah. But this movie doesn't do any of that.
I'm gonna still come to bat for the John Waters version of this because I think that would have been interesting.
Sure. Oh yeah, I'm not saying no.
If I'm picking though, if we're playing fantasy, you know, football here, I want the Todd Haynes version.
Oh well, okay, you know, yeah.
Because that would have gone much more it would have been a much more incisive look at the ways that culture shapes people. And the way they are, the way they shape it themselves, if they have the power to do so.
Sure.
Jessica Chastain's performance here is fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
But even like her, one of her big sort of for your consideration moments is the on-air, you know, addicted to Ativan, being out of it moment. And even that, you see in the documentary.
You see in the documentary.
Because it happened on television, you know, there's footage.
Yeah. You know, you don't get to see her in her later years, you know, as Grand Marshal at gay pride parades. You don't get to see the stuff that made her beloved to queer people later on.
Right, which is why Bailey and Barbato made that movie.
Yeah. So it's a weird film.
Yeah.
And it just, it stops short of being anything.
Yeah.
The filmmaking is perfunctory. It relies entirely on wigs, costumes, sets.
I was going to say. And,
there's
and
nothing
the period
exciting.
Detail is, you know,
the period detail accurate. Is fine. There's nothing exciting about this filmmaking. It is... It is very much, as you said, by the numbers.
Yeah. You know, Cherry Jones is good as her mother, but, you know, has a fairly limited amount of emotional range that she's allowed as a character.
The closing credits, there's a well-known song, well-known by people who know Tammy Faye Baker.
Right.
Well-known song that over the closing credits is sung by her daughter,
yes,
Tammy Sue Baker, who is every bit the singer that poor Tammy Faye was not.
Mm.
And can I say one more thing?
There, sure.
And there's a bit at the end, and I don't give it away, but it felt like it was, I felt like the ending was a bit condescending toward her. Because you see her in a situation where she is experiencing one reality and the rest of the world is experiencing a different reality. And it's an almost, it's a sort of a delusional moment.
It's like the end of Sunset Boulevard.
And I thought, is this what you want me to think of her? You know? Strange. It's strange.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, it is unfair to her.
I'm just really disappointed at this, and I'm also disappointed at the way it doesn't dig the knives into contemporary evangelical culture like it should, because it should.
Yeah,
because someone should.
I mean, because in a way, you can look at this movie and think, oh, well, you know, what outliers they were.
Yeah,
but it's like, no, you could end this movie with a montage of like Joel Osteen and all these other folks who are still working the same con. Anyway, so many things this movie could have done and doesn't. So,
you saw the new film from Shion Sono. I have not seen it yet.
It
stars Nicolas Cage.
It stars Nicolas Cage.
What's it called?
Sophia Boutella. It's called Prisoners of the Ghostland, and it is a hot mess.
Well, do we not expect that from Shion Sono?
But it's not a hot mess in the Shion Sono way in terms of just being like genre defying and, you know, like having its own sort of sense of narrative. It just kind of lies there, unfortunately.
Okay. Tell me the name again.
Prisoners of the Ghostland.
Prisoners of the Ghostland.
Yeah.
All right.
So Nicolas Cage is a bank robber named Hero.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this town and it's corrupt and the governor sends him to go rescue a woman who he refers to as his granddaughter. But, you know, she was in the brothel that the governor runs. The governor, to make sure that Hero does what he's supposed to do, puts him in this leather jumpsuit that has like explosives on his balls.
All right.
And then, you know, so it's this whole like ticking clock rescue thing, and there's a nuke, and there's samurais and trucks and zombies, and you know, you would think this would all be fun.
That sounds fun to me.
It's not.
It is not.
It is not fun. You know, it's a real letdown because, again, like Tammy Faye, you expect more from this. Shion Sono is, you know, at his best, I think one of our great sort of bonkers auteurs right now. You and I saw a film called Love Exposure that's like a 3.5 hour movie about superheroes and upskirt photography and gender identity that is riveting. You know, he did a film a couple of years ago called Why Don't You Go Play in Hell, which is, I think, one of the best movies ever made about filmmaking and the drive to be a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and look, if it's a midnight movie and maybe you've gotten into the edibles and you just want to see a movie where Nicolas Cage yells...
Lately I've really gotten into the edibles.
Yes. Where Nicolas Cage yells, karate chop you at someone. I mean, then, yes, you're going to come away with that.
Okay.
But there's... Even by Sion Sono standards, this movie has almost no internal logic. The stakes don't make sense. The its own rules don't make sense. And it's just really kind of flat. There are some occasional moments of, like, visual splendor, you know, cherry blossom petals in slow-mo and that kind of thing. But, this just doesn't work. And I was really disappointed because I like Sono a lot. This is his first film in English. I got to meet him at the Spirit Awards a couple of years ago, and I totally nerded out. I was like, oh my God, you're Sion Sono. I was very much disappointed. I've talked to other people who are fans of his who didn't think this one worked either. It may be that if you've never seen one of his movies, you'll just think this one's wild and crazy and all over the place and in that Nicolas Cage kind of way, and maybe you'll come away with it having enjoyed it. But I would say see one of the good ones.
Would you like to talk about streaming films and or physical media right now?
Absolutely, yes.
Do you have something you would like to share with me?
You do yours first.
Well, it's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the spooky season. It's time to watch more and more and more vintage Hammer horror films.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, some of them are the greats. The Gorgon. I could watch the Gorgon every year. It's so perfect. But Scream Factory just put out a Blu-ray of a 1960 Peter Cushing film called The Brides of Dracula.
Mm.
It's about a baron in Eastern Europe who recruits the undead for evil purposes. And Dr. Van Helsing has to stop this.
Uh-huh.
Along the way, there are lurid colors, costumes, wigs, and makeup. And that's all you need. I go back and forth between wanting to see, like, truly frightening horror movies in this, the spooky season.
Yes.
And wanting to see wonderful old boring Hammer movies. Because the comfort I feel in watching the old boring Hammer movies is the same sort of, it's the same coziness that I get from watching, you know, a French extreme horror film from 2013 where people are being eviscerated.
Right.
And it looks real, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, as per our recent discussion of Malignant.
So the Brides of Dracula.
The Brides of Dracula.
Y'all.
I like my horror movies delivered to me with a certain sense of wit,
mm-hmm.
with the acknowledgement that, yes, this is over the top and we're just going to go with that. So I'm going to recommend a new Blu-ray of Theater of Blood.
Oh, okay.
Vincent Price is a vengeful Shakespearean actor. His daughter, played by the late, great Diana Rigg. And he seeks vengeance upon London theater critics who have savaged his latest production.
Hey, listen, if you're a critic,
you have it coming.
You have it coming.
And
we all know this.
He dispatches all of them in the style of Shakespearean tragedies.
Yeah.
So I think it's Robert Morley gets his beloved poodles fed to him in a pie, and a shout out to Titus Andronicus.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the other ones, but they're all crazy and entertaining. And so, yeah, if you like 60s, 70s Vincent Price, this is one of my favorites of that era.
I'm excited to watch that.
It's fun.
With some celery and hummus. And not candy. No Reese's Cups bite-sized candies.
You can have one.
None of them. Oh, I don't know that I can.
Really?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Listen. Until I figure out how to work this monitor to figure out what it is that's supposed to be happening with me, And let me tell you, that booklet, the instruction manual, I always say, I need an instruction manual. I don't know that I need this instruction manual. It is complicated.
Like stereo instructions?
Do you have any tips on how to work the Vario One Touch?
Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast at gmail.com.
It's new. It just came in the mail. There are so many better things to come in the mail, though. Like books you buy.
Well, of course.
Records you pre-order months in advance, and then you just get surprised. The blood sugar monitor is not the thing that you see arriving in the mail that makes you clap your hands and go, oh, hey, yay, my blood sugar monitor is here.
Oh, the Wells Fargo wagon is a comedy. Okay, right. Anyway, hey, we have a Patreon.
Do we have letters?
We don't.
Oh, no letters this
week? No.
Has this ever happened before?
Yes.
Okay. All right, great. Talk about Patreon then, I guess.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, patreon.com/linoleumknife. Do you like this and do you want more of this? We've got lots more shows that are exclusive to our subscribers. Starting at $1 a month, you get Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife, where we take 20 or 30 minutes and go deep into a single film.
You get a daily thing called LKRX, where we prescribe cultural objects to you.
Yes. And then working your way up the scale, you get things like LKTV, a podcast of the television, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a podcast of the food, and it's not just going to be all diabetes all the time.
I promise.
There will be fun things, too.
Maybe.
And then, of course, Linoleum Nights, where we talk about what we feel like, and we it's the Not Clean show, and you can watch
us. Yeah, we do some cussing.
Yeah, you can watch us.
Me more than you. Like, you're so in the groove of being on a clean podcast that you forget to unfurl your F word flag and to show your true linguistic colors.
Well, see, the other thing is, like, I get to swear on Breakfast All Day and Max Film. So.
But do you maximize your potential on those either?
Well, I don't want to sound like, you know, I don't want to sound like a seventh grader who's testing these things out for the first time. You know?
I will be a seventh grader for the rest of my life.
You have the maestro's touch. From a lifetime of experience. You know exactly when to pepper. Anyway, we do monthly club meetings. We do lots of other
stuff. I know
what
joke you were fixing to say just then, and you didn't. I felt the pause in your voice, and I was like, oh, I know where he wants to go, but he's not doing it. And no. You know what? Good.
Thank you.
Move on.
I'm trying to.
All right.
Lots of fun things at linoleum at patreon.com/linoleumknife. Please check that out.
By the way, it's nothing bad what he was going to do. It's just nonsensical and meaningless.
It's an inside joke.
And dumb. An inside joke that would mean nothing.
We're spending way too much time.
It would mean nothing to anyone except us.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to, for my podcast to highlight this week, All Things Cozy is about to record their 100th episode.
I cannot tell you how wonderful All Things Cozy is. Matt
and Jillian.
And Jillian are, first of all, they are our personal friends, and we think they are the greatest. And I love any podcast where they review scented candles and that's not just all they do, but like there are so many other things that they talk about that will make you feel
cozy,
nice and cozy and happy and content and soothed.
It is a very soothing program.
And what really gets me about their show is that they, like us, live in Los Angeles, which is not an environment that lends itself to coziness.
Yeah.
This is not a cozy city. It's not Cabot Cove. it's a place where the sun is always out.
Yeah.
Like almost always. Like to the point where when I hear when it's a cloudy day or a rainy day and I hear people complain, I think, "Come here so I can slap you in the face." You idiot.
Yeah, if there's an overcast day when the sun comes back, people just get crazily jubilant about it, like they're living in, you know, Tacoma or something. But yes, they managed to keep it cozy in a very not cozy locale. And so, yeah, if you have not already checked out All Things Cozy, you'll be delighted, I think.
You will be.
Yeah. Now, you can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review there. We will read it on the air. You can follow us on social media at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can also leave us, by the way, you don't have to go, the 5-star review is for Apple Podcasts, but pretty much anywhere where you can hear us, there's a way to leave positive feedback, a little thumbs up, a little stars, whatever it is. So if you're listening to this on, say, Spotify or Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or Apple, or Amazon Music or Google Play or CastBox or Podbean or any of those joints, leave a little thing that says you like us because we hunger for your affirmation. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. Check him out at bleu.bandcamp.com. He has a new album called Six Tape. It's really great. And you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions, comments, and tips on how to use the blood sugar monitor. It's been lovely.
Keep it easy to understand because I am really dumb.
It's true. Thank you for listening to Ovid's Linoleum Knife Hour, brought to you by Ovid.tv. Until next time.
Goodbye.